This is a download from the BBC. To download other programmes or for more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.
Here come the box office top 10. Thanks for the thousands of emails. We'll get to as many as we can. Mongols at 10.
Genghis, A Love Story. I think we did arrive on a proper pronunciation, but I've forgotten what it was.
Iron Man at 9.
Three quarters of an interesting film, one quarter of a rubbish film. Could have lived without Gwyneth Paltrow. Let's see where the franchise goes from here.
Vegas. What happens in Vegas at 8?
Should stay in Vegas. Same gag, same film.
Philip on the movie here at 7, which is Prom Night. To Mark and Simon, can decide which one you want to be. Yesterday, I watched Prom Night at my local cinema. For Mark's recognition, I'm 15, and I thought that Prom Night was hugely disappointing.
Mm.
Having watched the original as well, I'd like to know, what were they thinking? However, I'd like to know what Mark thinks on how possibly they should have had a story about what happened to the main character as a child, then had a sequel to that, being the film that I watched yesterday. Of course, as we know, some sequels not as good as the prequel. What are the Good Doctor's thoughts?
Well, my main thing about Prom Night is the first Prom Night, which is a 1980 movie, which is an X-rated sleazy slasher movie, which did what it said on the tin. And now we have a 15-rated stupid slasher movie, which doesn't even do what it says on the tin and is hugely disappointing. And all I think is, you know, if you want to see those movies, see the originals. And there's no reason to go and see the remake of Prom Night, because in the same way as there was probably no reason to go and see the remake of all the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. I mean, that's just, people have run out of ideas and they're just using them really as branding exercises. I mean, they're these... The
Gone Baby Gone at 6.
Which I like. Thank you for cutting me off there in my prime, which I like with reservations. I think that it's possible that Ben Affleck has a career ahead of him behind the camera rather than in front of it. I still think Casey Affleck is a terrific talent. I loved him in Jesse James, which I saw again the other week, and there's nothing exploitative about the film. It's a shame that it had to be held up. Its release was held up as it was, but I think it was right that it was.
On Jesse James, actually, Lauren, not that Lauren, another one.
Not Lauren that I'm the sidekick of.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that's when I'm not being your side.
Last week's film title, again, we were talking about most descriptive title.
Yes.
Obviously, The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford should be in there. Also, Gunfight at the OK Corral. Most misleading film title she'd like to pitch in with, To Kill a Mockingbird.
Yes.
It would be hard to come up with one that's more misleading than that, but I'm sure people will have a go. Superhero movie at 5.
Ghastly.
Now, The Happening's at 4. Mora in Massachusetts. Dear Doctor and Rose, assuming we can all agree that M. Night Shyamalan fell well short of his goal to make the best B movie you've ever seen in The Happening, what would you say is the best B movie of recent memory? I nominate
Tremors.
Mission to Mars.
Tremors.
Simon in Worcester Park, Simon and Mark, rather conservatively, listening to the Good Doctor's comments on the podcast regarding The Happening, I was amused to hear exactly the same words that I said about The Happening, a sanctimonious message about the state of the planet, either that or the world's worst cases of hay fever.
I can't figure out whether that's we agree or an accusation of plagiarism, in which case my lawyers should be... Who's that from?
I don't know. I've forgotten already.
No, but
it's already in another pile.
It's interesting how many people have written in and said that they thought The Happening was absolutely rubbish. I still stand by the thing that it's not absolutely rubbish. It doesn't work and it's horribly flawed. But I do think the flaws are the sanctimony, absolutely, the sense of superciliousness. And I would love to hear from anybody who did this, who answered the question, what's making the wind blow?
Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull at 3. Paul on this email says, Dear Derek and Clive, although there are a lot of spoilers in it, this abridged script of Indiana Jones and the Blar of the Watchmen flip made me laugh and captured most of the things that annoyed me about seeing the film. Someone really needs to take George Lucas's filmmaking license away and put a few points on Spielberg's. Sex and the City at 2. A fantastically long email from one listener about this. Basically, he's asking the question, are there any men who liked Sex and the City?
Well, there are, because, you know, there are stupid people in the world, and, you know, that's absolutely fine. There's stupid people of all genders and races and creeds, and, you know, I mean, let's be absolutely clear. Liking Sex and the City isn't a gender issue. It's not a sexual orientation issue. It's a, you know, it's a dumb or clever issue. If you're intelligent, you think Sex and the City is rubbish.
The UK's number one is The Incredible Hulk, and Grant says, Dear Pinky and Perky, I can't believe the Good Doctor's review failed to mention Liv Tyler's lips. Did I miss the scene where she injected injected them with the super soldier serum to get them to Hulk-like proportions. The Hulk himself looked more realistic and gave a better performance.
I've met Liv Tyler. Those are her lips.
We've all met Liv Tyler.
Yeah, no, we have all met Liv Tyler. Because
got them from her dad.
She did, exactly. I mean, all you need to do is not watch that video when Aerosmith play, Walk This Way with Run DMC. And that's, there we go. It's simply genetics. It's what's that thing that Woody Allen said? It's not chemistry, it's physics.
Michael in Surrey. Hey, guys, went to see The Incredible Hulk following Mr. Mayo's praise last week. Can we say, before we go any further, if you were listening to the reviews last week, overwhelmingly, you'd have been influenced by what Mark had to say. And then right at the end, I chipped in. I thought it was quite good. Anyway, Michael continues. The film was so dull that it actually caused me for the first time ever to drift off in the cinema, albeit that it was only for a few seconds before I was woken up to see Bruce Banner inexplicably in yet another country in CGI, as a Newsnight commentator suggested, that really did look like it was out of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It was Pirates bad. In fact, even my friends that liked Pirates were bored during this.
Yeah, the Hulky bits are a real problem. And I think it's just time to accept that Hulk may work as a comic strip. It may work as a cheesy TV show. It's not going to work as a film. And that's the beginning and end of it. And interestingly enough, there was a lot of stuff in the press last week, about Edward Norton apparently going off to some foreign climes at the point the film opened. There was some, I may be getting this wrong, there was some reports about his involvement in the script and then his either happiness or not happiness with the finishing. But, it's whatever caused it to be what it is. The problems are exactly the same. Ang Lee tried to make an art house movie out of The Hulk and discovered that you can't. The Hulk tried to make a mainstream movie out of The Hulk and discovered that you can't.
We're talking movies. Hello to podcast listeners. Thank you very much indeed for your indulgence. Hello to all our regulars.
Hello to Jason Isaacs, although he's in America filming that TV show. So he could be listening on a podcast.
Okay, and David Morrissey,
who's probably here.
And assorted members of progressive rock groups.
From the 70s.
So
Teeth.
Take it away. What is new that we should be interested in?
Watch me tiptoe gently around this. Okay, so Teeth, which is a high concept, low budget, scrungy horror comedy from Mitchell Lichtenstein, who is the son of Roy. Is it Lichtenstein? The pop art guy.
Yes.
Wham, him, fine. His son, interestingly enough. There we go. So it's a satire on the American celibacy movement. I've got there's a lovely poster that I was sent by somebody incidentally who's religious, which is a picture of Mary and the thing at the top which says celibacy is 100% effective and then crossed out 99.99% effective. Thank you very much for the message. See?
Yeah, I see you.
Yeah, humorous joke.
Well, slightly.
Fine, okay. Well, the American celibacy movement, which is very, very big in certain sort of religiously inclined states, which here is depicted as our lead actress, is a vocal spokesperson for the celibacy movement, the ring movement. You wear the ring of celibacy. Okay?
Yes.
Here's a clip.
What about the most precious gift of all? Are you going to give that to the first guy who buys you a big bunch of roses?
No way.
And I'm not just talking to the girls. You guys, you have the same gift to give. Are you going to give that to some girl because she looks like she just stepped out of a music video?
No.
You're going to hold on to it and share it with the mother of your children.
Yeah,
I mean, that's what the ring is all about. The way it wraps around your finger, that's to remind you to keep your gift wrapped.
Which I think gives you pretty much the tone of the movie, or at least the opening tone of the movie. The film then proceeds in that the gift has Dentata. It ties into the legend of Dentata. It ties into news stories about Lorena Bobbitt. It is, and you can fill in the blanks from there onwards. Now, here's the interesting thing. Dawn's gift has teeth, scrungy horror setup. And there's a very thin line in the area of scrungy horror satire between clever and stupid, which is what the Spinal Tap thing always said. And this is a movie which absolutely walks along that line. I have seen 1-star reviews of Teeth. I have seen 4-star reviews of Teeth. And I think the honest truth is that somewhere in the middle is the answer. Some people have suggested that, like Sex and the City, the division is along gender lines, that women will find it funny and men will find it squirm-inducing, in the way that perhaps a movie like Hard Candy, because I remember seeing Hard Candy and finding it very, very hard, and yet seeing it with somebody who laughed all the way through. I saw Teeth...
Female?
Yes, I saw Teeth with Linda. And I have to say, she...
That's Professor Kermode.
Professor Williams.
Professor Williams,
please don't
okay.
call her Kermode, because it just gets me into trouble. And she laughed outrageously. And in fact, at one point, she laughed very, very, very long and very, very, very loud. So there is certainly, you know, and I didn't laugh quite as much as that, although I did, you know, I did find certain bits of the writing funny. And I think it's an interesting exercise. What it is it's like a video nasty from the 1980s. It's got very sort of down and dirty, scrungy horror visuals, but not very much of them because there aren't that many special effects in it. But what there are done in a very kind of rough and ready prosthetic sort of way. It's the poster of it refers to some extent to David Cronenberg's Shivers, and there are certainly hints of Rabid, David Cronenberg's movie Rabid, in it. Although David Cronenberg never made comedies in this way. Cronenberg's movies were always a lot more moody, a lot more dark. I mean, this is, you know, an out-and-out comedy in as much as it's a sort of Rivolto comedy, and it knows that it's funny and it knows that it's grisly.
Rivolto comedy?
Rivolto comedy,
is
yeah.
Is that a new category?
Well, no, I think it's...
The,
you know, people.
I think that should be a...
Rivolto
think,
comedy? You yeah, know what I mean? It's like a gross-out comedy. It's like, to some extent, that's what The Evil Dead was. Also, it reminded me of... There's a very good video nasty called The Witch Who Came from the Sea. God bless the director of Public Prosecutions. When the video nasties thing started in the 1980s, the DPP produced a list of 60 titles of movies which were potentially bannable under the Obscene Publications Act. And this was great, right? If you're a teenager, there's the hit list of the movies that you have to go, everything on it. I mean, you might have missed some of these things. Everybody knew Cannibal Holocaust and Driller Killer and all that stuff. Who would have found out about The Witch Who Came from the Sea had somebody not, you know, taken a copy of it and held it up in court and said, oh, that's another title we must have a look at. And like all of those movies, they were scrungy and reprehensible and stupid, but there were interesting ideas often in many of them, more interesting ideas than there were in mainstream movies. And in the case of Teeth, you sort of got this sense that some of the scenes are well played. It's Jess Wexler, who's the lead actress, won a Sundance Award for a juicy, jaw-dropping performance. So some of the scene, and there you heard that scene there, I think she's got a good line between, you know, between comedy and straight, and it does play the stuff straight. Other scenes are rubbish. Other scenes are really cronky and badly put together in that way that happens with video nasties. If, for example, you look at Abel Ferrara's Driller Killer, there are really terrific dramatic scenes.
I've always missed that.
No, I know, but that's one of the cases in which it's not the movie that you think it is. Driller Killer is not, despite the title, despite the poster.
Is it a killer with a drill?
It does, but sort of peripherally.
That's what I would expect.
But actually, you could call that film The Loneliness of the Long Distance Painter. Because actually, that's what it's about. It's about somebody who's a painter, whose career is failing them, who's living next door to a terrible punk rock band, who
feels
finally
a bit lonely, so decides to alleviate the boredom by killing people with a drill.
Yes, but there's much less. What I'm saying is there's much less of that than you'd think.
How reassuring.
In the same way that in the case of Teeth, what's actually the prosthetic scrunge is much less than you'd actually think. When it does come, it's funny, rather than, although it's Yucca Rivolto funny.
In that scene that we heard, how many of those people make it through to the end of the movie?
Oh, all of them.
They all do.
We think who's in that? There may be one person in that particular scene who doesn't. But the other thing that I think is interesting about it is this. We've sat through so many films recently, so many horror films in which the story is basically the same. Young woman abducted and, you know, and then horrible stuff happens. If I see another wrist strap on a movie, I am going to walk out. I am at the point when it's like, I'm sorry, don't do this anymore. I am just so bored with this plotline. How much better to see a movie which turns the tables in the way that Hard Candy did, that has a sense of humour in the way that so many of these movies doesn't, that understands its own ludicrousness and its own stupidity, understands that it is in the same way as, for example, Piranha Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death, right? Here's the interesting thing. Piranha Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death.
What happened in that?
Well, there's a tribe of feminist separatist women who are living in the Avocado Jungle of Death. Yes. And they have split.
Where's that then?
It's, well,
the Avocado Jungle of Death.
It's in somebody's imagination, right? Okay. And a group of people are going in to find radical ethno-historian Irma Kurtz. See, Heart of Darkness reference, who is running the Piranha Women in the Avocado Jungle of Death. But the Piranha Women have split into two warring tribes, one of whom believes that you should eat men with avocados, the other of whom believes that you should eat them without avocados. So they have, so it's a feminist satire, and it stars your man who does Politically Incorrect, Bill Maher. And whenever anyone brings it up, Bill Maher's always very embarrassed about it. But Bill Maher went on to be very funny on television. And the person who wrote that movie, wrote and directed that movie, wrote the script that became Pretty Woman. So actually, oddly enough, became one of the most successful screenwriters in recent Hollywood history. Now, I don't know what's going to happen to Mitchell Lichtenstein. It may well be, after making a movie as cronky and creaky and occasionally rubbish as Teeth, that he'll never work again. But there is sparks in here, and I through it all, I enjoyed myself. I was reminded of the warm, rubbery love of Video Nasties, and it was an idea that was funny.
The warm, rubbery love of Video Nasties.
And it was,
you
know,
strange.
And
man,
I'm not saying
are.
I'm not saying for 1 minute, you know, great movie, because it isn't, because there's so much about it that's creaky. But what I am saying is I enjoyed it. There was stuff in it that was really funny and really interesting, stuff in it that was really rubbish, and I think you'll have a better time in that than many of the movies that are out there in cinema
like
at the moment.
Flowers, would you like chocolates, or would you like Teeth. Warm rubbery love from a Video Nasty? Martin, one of our regular correspondents. Dear Simon,
in Old Portsmouth.
Yes. Dear Simon and the bloke who gets to stand next to and slightly behind the lovely Lauren Laverne on her TV show, it starts. Those who are sensitive to such things have this week noticed a strange bitonal subsonic rumbling in the ether. Dogs raise their noses to scent the wind. Portsmouth urchins refuse their gruel. Old Seth's funny hip gives him jip. Although the moon's at the wrong phase, something is happening. It can only be the new Keira Knightley Sienna Miller film. The higher component
say
of the sound...
Speak it softly.
The higher component of the film, of the sound, is the surging hormonal overload of a million teenage boys. Imagine the sound of thousands of sheets of bubble wrap being simultaneously twisted. This is the sound of countless zits giving up under the pressure. The lower note is more ominous. Triggering seismographs around the globe, geologists fear that the highly active peak of Mount Kermode is heading for a further eruption. Pyroclastic flows of scalding critical bile will flow down its flanks. Searing clouds of postmodernist deconstructionist theory will choke the life from the unworthy. Tremors as of large fists striking huge desks will reverberate across the globe. Having said this, I bet it's actually quite good. Regards as ever, Martin. Most misleading titles. This was because someone suggested To Kill a Mockingbird. Clearly, I mean, I still think that's going to be unbeatable.
Hard to top.
Terry Gilliam's Brazil being suggested by Pete. Carl in Belfast. How about Abbott and Costello Go to Mars? Because they actually go to Venus.
Yeah, there's another one of those, isn't there? Krakatoa East of Java.
And is it west of Java?
It's west of Java, yeah.
I thought we should have spotted that. So anyway, we've teed up the fact that Sienna and Keira are in the same movie. And this should be, as our correspondent was suggesting, a moment of interest.
But here's the thing, you see, never judge a book entirely by its cover. Look, the posters are, you know, Keira Knightley and Sienna Miller starring together in a film written by Keira's mum, okay? It's kind of the perfect storm. And I've been going on the train watching those posters go by for a week thinking... Lordy, 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 lordy. Okay, so the
something you did in a previous life.
The story is, it's been a very bad man. It's a quadrangular love story spiraling around the character of Dylan Thomas, as played by Matthew Rhys, as played actually pretty well by Matthew Rhys. He's a very fine actor, and he does the role of Dylan Thomas jolly well. During World War II, Thomas was a conscientious objector, although I think the reason he actually didn't go to fight was because he had asthma. And in the story as we see it here, basically he stays at home. He's in London for a while writing not very good propaganda films. But basically what he ends up doing is the bulk of the movie has him in this lovely cottagey idyll in which he is spending some time with various women, only one of whom is actually his wife. He's living with his wife, played by Sienna Miller. He's living next door to IKEA, who is keeping them all in money with the wage check, which is sent home by William Killick, played by Cillian Murphy, who's her husband, who is off fighting. So basically you've got the drunken, womanizing poet having a completely oh what a lovely war, whilst meanwhile somebody else is doing all the horrible work and providing the the money for it all. And I am led to believe that there is historical truth in all this. So a couple of interesting things about it. The first one is the film's directed by John Mabry, who made Love Is the Devil and also made The Jacket, which Keira Knightley was in before. And I didn't think she was great, although I did like that film, and much more so than I thought most critics did. It was underrated. And Mabry has said that he tends to make films about messed up people in love. He said it rather more forcefully than that. And it is interesting that the portrayal of Dylan Thomas in The Edge of Love is almost wholly unsympathetic. I mean, the character is, a louche, womanizing drunk who at one point attempts to get his best friend's husband put into prison so that he can have her attentions all to his... I mean, it is not a thing that's going to make you come out of it thinking what a lovely man he is. He does at one point say, the reason I, carouse around with all these women is because I'm a poet. It's required of me. And you just think, I'm sorry, this is an absolute demonstration of that thing about, poet means slap me, please. So John Mabry, I think, has got an interesting visual style. I think Thomas, as played by, you know, by Reese, in that Matthew Reese, in that unsympathetic way, is perfectly fine. And the film's not bad. It is oddly inert, however, and it does have very, very languorous passages. And there are two problems. One of them is the screenplay can't quite decide who the main story is about. What we know is it's not centrally about Dylan Thomas, but it can't quite decide which of the other characters it might be about. And so it ends up really being about the whole quadrangular story, and it does lose focus. It's not completely without form, but it does lose focus, and the dialogue is terribly clunky. The other problem is the range of performances. So on the one hand, you have Matthew Reese. He's Welsh. He's playing Welsh. He's doing fine. It's all absolutely fine and good. Then you have Cillian Murphy, Irish, playing English, doing it very well. He's got a great capacity with accents, as you've seen from films like Red Eye, in which he plays an American, you know, homicidal maniac, and does it rather well. And I do think Cillian Murphy's a terrific actor. I can always enjoy him. Then we have Keira Knightley, who is actually better than I have seen her in anything before. And I know that sounds like damning with faint praise. I don't think she's great, but I think that what she is she's trying. I think she's trying. She's still trying. She's still
going to get
yourself
punched.
No,
again.
I'm not. I'm. You have to bear with me on this. I've thought about this quite a lot. I have the suspicion. I would love Keira Knightley to do a brilliant performance, okay? Because actually, despite what everybody thinks, I would love nothing more than to be able to stand up and say, you know what? There, look, I was completely... No, I wasn't completely wrong because the performances up until now haven't been great. But to say, look, there... And there's a part of me that suspects that there is something coming in the future in which she is going to be... In the same way that, you think about... People like, for example, you know, Julia Roberts wasn't a great actress, and yet she ended up doing sort of very, very good roles. And I suspect that there may be something in Keira Knightley's film in which I'm forced to say, I eat my words, it's a great performance, bravo. And I would like nothing more than that, because to be honest, even I'm getting bored of hearing my criticism. And I think in this, she's perfectly fine. I think she struggles a little bit with the accent. She has a little bit of a problem with the fact that it's a script that requires her to refer to Dylan Thomas as Dylan Thomas four times in the opening scene. So she said, oh, hello, Dylan Thomas. How are you, Dylan Thomas? Would you like to get Dylan Thomas a drink? Because I'm standing here with Dylan Thomas. You know, there's an awful lot of that. We know it's Dylan Thomas, and short of being that bit in the Doors when the guy goes, da 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 da, it's like, fine, he is about to do his greatest. So that. And then we have Sienna Miller.
That's the sound of Mark's head hitting our plastic.
Now, let me just say, there is
a treat for webcam viewers, by the way, because we are being live streamed.
There is a suggestion.
Do that again, but harder.
No. Okay. There's a suggestion that Sienna Miller is in the film in order to make Keira Knightley look better, which a job she does spectacularly well. Although I don't want to say that to take away from Keira Knightley's performance, because grumpy old so-and-so that I am, I think Keira Knightley acquits herself perfectly fine, and I think it's an upward turn. And I, as I said, Sienna Miller, apparently her character, I think, is Irish. I honestly couldn't tell you. I mean, she says, come here, a few times, which sounded vaguely Welsh to me. There were moments in which we went to the Antipodes. There were several moments in which it just sounded like somebody from Primrose Hill. There were little hints occasionally of American inflection. And it was like one of those kaleidoscopic performances when it's like a... It's like a global tour.
She's a Rainbow Nation.
Thank you so much. She's a rainbow.
I'm getting there.
Yeah, she comes in colours like that song. She's a rainbow, and her voice speaketh for the whole world. Sadly, the whole world appears to be speaketh-ing at exactly the same time. Plus, she's a plank. I mean, you know, it's like you go, okay, and I'm supposed to sympathise with you because what exactly? So, there, I think, are the list of problems. The movie is inert. There are in John Mabry's directions flashes of the film that you think that he might want to be making, particularly one nightmarish sequence in which you're reminded what a great visual artist he is. I think the script is flawed, although not without some form of admirable merit. I think Keira Knightley, who I'm not going to call Ikea anymore, is better than I have seen her before, and I think Sienna Miller is Sienna Miller.
This from Rich Thrift. Dear Pearl and Dean, it's a great long...
Was I fair?
Very
was
fair.
Was I even-handed?
Very fair and balanced. You can sense people going, oh, God.
I know, I'm sorry to disappoint you all.
My wife is a very, very long thing. He says, whilst being thoroughly wit-attained by the good doctor's brutal beating of Sex in the City, I just want to register a general complaint. It was a great long thing. The gist of it is, my wife, he says, had organised a trip to the movies to see Sex in the City with her girlfriends, arranging at the same time that the Associated Gentleman would go next door to see Indy 4. many paragraphs later. So mind-numbingly poor, this is on Indie, and the alleged twist written so badly that any redeeming features about the film soon gave up trying and promptly shrunk off into a corner to cry. All emotional investment aside, words fail me as to how bad it was. The ladies, however, had a great time. They cried, they laughed, they came out, and they went off shopping for shoes. So, what can we do now? We've got a couple of minutes ahead of the race. What can you do briefly?
I can very quickly do The Escapist. I think because we've kind of covered this before with Brian Cox, we don't need to play clips. Can I do that?
Yeah, you've got... Okay. Let me just check how long you've got. A couple of minutes.
Okay, so The Escapist, we had Brian Cox on talking about this before. It's basically a prison break movie with a certain degree of swearing, a certain degree of violence, and a certain degree of metaphysical aspiration in the mold of Shawshank Redemption. Brian Cox basically leads a group of misfits who need to break out of prison. They need to break out of prison at this particular moment because Brian has to get out to solve a...
See last week's programme.
He spoke very warmly about Rupert Wyatt, the director who he'd made a short film with called Get the Picture, and he said that basically he came to him asking him if he wanted to do a bit part, and Brian Cox said, I'd like to do a lead role, and then he went off and wrote this part specifically for Brian Cox. And the result's an interesting movie. I think to some extent it's being marketed as a kind of geezery, you know, gangster pick, which I think is a mistake because it isn't really that at all.
It's an old-fashioned prison movie.
It is an old-fashioned prison movie, there are obviously inflections of Shawshank in as much as, for example, at one point they need to. One key thing in The Breakout involves going into a confession box, and it's to do with using religious icons in a way which is knowingly sacrilegious. They break through a wall with a cross, which is very similar to that moment in Shawshank Redemption when they get the Bible and he opens it at Exodus and it's got the rock chisel in it, which is the thing that's allowed Andy Dufresne to get through the wall. I think the supporting performances are pretty solid, but most impressively, it's clearly a low-budget movie that's got very confined spaces, geographical spaces, which it works with very well. It has a claustrophobic sense to it that it wants to kind of to keep going. It wants to get the maximum possible out of its production design, which it does very well. There is a strange backward unfolding of the plot, which allows for the plot to be told sort of in flashback, but also to preserve what you thought of as a twist. I thought of as a...
What did you think of it?
Well,
as?
I think twist is slight, because there are signs that it's coming, didn't you think?
Something that isn't a twist.
It's a tweak. It's a left turn. It's a twizzle. It's a twingle. It's something else beginning with TW.
But it's a Pringle.
It's a Pringle. It's a plot Pringle is what it is. M. Night Shyamalan does plot twists, but this is a plot Pringle. But it's a metaphysical Pringle that as you crunch, you think, you've got to take the crunchy with the smooth. And I did enjoy Brian Cox's performance in it, and I thought it was very encouraging that this first-time feature maker has, I think, got a strong future ahead of him.
Is a plot left turn inherently more interesting than a plot right turn?
I don't know what a plot
does
right...
Does a left turn imply...
It does. A plot left turn...
Means,
No. A plot left turn is... Ooh. Right. A plot right turn would be aha.
But, oh, okay.
A plot twist would be a... And a plot...
Pringle
would be ah.
I see. Paul in Welshpool. Dear Toshack and Keegan, surely the most inappropriate...
Don't get it. Have to explain it.
Football. Liverpool and football.
Don't get it, don't care.
Okay. Dear Toshak and Keegan, surely the most inappropriate film title ever is Days of Thunder. I don't think it thunders once, and it seems to go on for years,
that's
not
right,
days.
Very good.
Justin in Oakham, surely calling a film about Einstein, DiMaggio and Munro insignificance is about as misleading as it gets. Oh, and by the way, if you head east from Java, you will get to Krakatoa eventually.
Eventually.
And lots of stuff on the happening. Before we get to the ruins, Tom... says, Ronnie and Ronnie, I did listen to Mark's review of The Happening last week, but he didn't do enough to put me off seeing it as I made a spontaneous visit to the cinema this week. It was, in capital letters, the worst film I've ever seen. There is nothing good about it. It's tacky, cheap, no real plot or message. I like The Village and his other earlier works, but this, I am lost for words. How did it get made? Peter in Bath, just part of what he says here. I put off listening to last week's podcast because I wanted to see The Happening with an unkermode influenced mind.
Yes.
However, after spending the entire duration of the film laughing out loud at what was, let's face it, the worst piece of cinema since Apocalypto, I was wildly disappointed when listening back last night to what was, in my opinion, an undeservedly mild rant, which I don't think you can have a mild rant. How does a film whose best piece of dialogue is "Are you eyeing up my lemon drink?" managed to escape a rant of the same proportion as Pirates?
Because
and finally, Jess, Fred and Ginger, having endured the happening last week at the cinema, my gentleman friend and I were most surprised by the good doctor's light treatment of the film. I agree that one of its major issues is its tone of smug superiority, but in my opinion, its problems are much more deep-rooted. Anyway, there's lots more.
You know, I think one of the things with this is I'm an old genre stalwart, and I feel that anybody who's attempting to do something intelligent and interesting, even when they fall down on, you know, should be rewarded. This may partly, I mean, I guarantee you some people will see Teeth and say, how on earth can you not thought that was the worst film you'd ever seen? Well, the reason is because I've seen, you know, Rugsuckers from Mars, and because I've seen The Witch Who Came from the Sea, and because I've seen, and because what you learn after a while is that within those sort of, the more disreputable the end of the market, actually often the more interesting the end results.
And we lead up then to the film as promised.
To the Ruins.
Just before the Coronation Stakes.
Which, after Teeth, which is a down-market grungy horror movie, then we have The Ruins, which is an up-market grungy horror movie, which is supported by DreamWorks, you know, the great DreamWorks, a huge, big purveyors of mainstream entertainment to the masses. And it's written by the same guy who wrote A Simple Plan. And the plot is essentially the beach meets Apocalypto via Day of the Triffids with a little bit of the necrotizing flesh of cabin fever thrown in for good measure. So you get a group of holidaymakers, right? And the holidaymakers over, you know, across the border, and they are given directions to a sort of Mayan temple which you mustn't ever go to because it's way off the beaten track. So of course they go there. One of them's looking for somebody else who's his brother who's missing anyway. So they go there and they get there and they find this kind of pyramid-like structure which is overgrown with overgrowth.
Right.
And then the next thing that happens is the locals turn up and surround the pyramid. And they realise the locals aren't going to let them go, and the only thing they can do is go up onto the pyramid.
Where the overgrowth is?
Where the overgrowth...
Do they go over it, or do they...
They go through
it?
The overgrowth, and the overgrowth then continues to overgrow. And they realise that the locals aren't going to let them off ever.
It was alive. It knows we're here. We just have to go. We have to go. Jeff, you didn't see it. Okay? I'm not staying here.
If we try to leave, they kill us. Matthias can't move. I can't just leave him here.
Okay, maybe we don't all have to go. I mean, I could go. I can get help.
They have guns. There are 50 of them. 60.
They killed that little kid, Amy. Okay, so you guys make a distraction. I can make it to the Jeep.
It's too
I can do
dangerous,
it.
Eric. We have to wait.
Wait for what?
We're being quarantined here. We are being kept here to die.
And the thing they're being quarantined from is the overgrowth.
Right, what, the stuff that's growing
It's the
over?
Stuff that's growing. Okay, now...
And they should have gone round it.
No, they can't.
Instead of through it.
You know, we can't... What's that thing?
Going on a bear
we
hunt.
Didn't go under it, we didn't go... Yes, exactly, that's the... What's how? It's a children's rhyme,
We're
isn't
going
it?
On a bear
We're going
hunt.
On a bear hunt.
Going to catch a big
gonna
one.
Going to catch a big one.
We're not scared.
Yeah.
As it sounded like Doctor
we
Who.
We can't go...
Over it.
It.
Can't go round it. Got to go through it.
Exactly, fine. Well, that's basically the story here. Now,
should we do an audiobook?
No, yes. Without wishing to give away the details, all you need to know is...
Uncle Mark has a few stories for you.
Necrotizing tendrils and plants that can do imitations of mobile phones does not necessarily sound...
So hang on, excuse me. A necrotizing tendril?
Tendril.
That's a plant that kills you, is it?
Honk! Okay, so you see, you do this all the time, and then I get accused of giving away plot details.
Well, I haven't said anything.
No, okay, fine.
You said necrotizing tendrils.
Yes, exactly.
What else is it going to do?
It can be anything.
It's not going to just wave in the wind, is it?
I don't even know why I bothered to make notes, because honestly...
Make notes?
No, I know. No, I made a note in this case, because this is what the BBFC said about the film.
Beware of the necrotizing
tendrils. It's rated 18 for strong bloody violence and gore, and it describes the scenes. It says, we see in gruesome detail some stuff happening, and then the second gory scene occurs when something else happens that's even more, and then even the description of it is pretty rough. It's shot by Darius Conji, who shot The Beach, and it's 90 minutes long, and it's 18 rated, which means it's like watching an old X certificate horror movie. And the thing that I liked about it is it's not original. Clearly you can see all the movies that it's based on, and it's not earth shattering in that there's no great moment in it in which you go, oh well, wow, I've never seen that sort of thing done before. But as a sheer nuts and bolts exercise in yuckiness, and actually quite well-constructed yuckiness, in which there's a group of people and they're in peril because there's some nameless monster, and then the nameless monster starts necrotizing all over the place. And there was several moments in which I went, ooh, but in a good way. And there were several moments when I thought, okay, fine, I know I've seen this movie done in a sort of mainstream way several times before.
Because it could be quite Scooby-Doo-ish, you know, if it's just a plant, you know, a little bit of the plant.
I know, and the thing that everyone always thinks is Day of the Triffids. Or other great plant, what's the other great plant horror movie?
Oh, I don't know.
What? Little Shop of Horrors.
Is it Little Shop of Horrors?
Little Shop of Horrors with the scene, with the feed me, feed me, feed me. Fine. Well, there, what I should have said in that case is it's the beach meets Apocalypto, meets all the other things with a little touch of Little Shop of Horrors thrown in for good measure. But again, in a marketplace in which horror movies so rarely do what it is that they're meant to do, to see something like The Ruins, which is well put together and nasty and scrungy, and, you know, it's tab A goes into slot B, and it's building blocks horror, but it does what it says on the tin. And if you want one of those, kind of experiences, which is what you do want...
Does it have a left turn, which might make you go... Ooh.
Well, if there's a left turn, can I just say that you've already told the nation the left turn? But it doesn't matter, because that's not the... Once you realise that that's what's going on, which I have to say is pretty early on, because the camera movements tell you that that's what's going on, then it's fine. So it's a popcorn horror movie with some added yuckiness, which does the job perfectly well. So, in an interesting week, obviously it is a better film than Teeth, in as much as it's more freshly put together, into more polished edges. It's like comparing, to some extent, you know, a big fast sports car with some cronky, weirdy little, you know, banger that'll probably only get 3 miles down the road. But you know what? There is charm and invention in that weird banger.
So
The movie of the week is The Ruins, with a very strong mention for Teeth, although I understand that many people will see Teeth and go, that's the worst film I've ever seen.
Thanks for downloading from the BBC. To find other downloads or more information, go online.
bbc.co.uk/5live.